Hey weirdos, it's Ash here, ready to share a little secret. Have you heard of Wondery Plus? With ad-free episodes and 1 week early access, it's like having an all-access pass to our lighthearted nightmare. So come join us on the dark side and try Wondery Plus today. You can join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or in Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Let Audible expand your life by listening. Explore over 1 million audiobooks and exclusive Audible originals that will inspire and motivate you, all in one easy app. Tap into your well-being with advice and insight from leading professionals and experts on better health, relationships, career, finance, investing, and even more. Maybe you want to kick a bad habit or start a good one. Recently, I listened to So Thirsty, which was really good. I like how the narrator went between the two characters' voices. That was really fun. And then I just started listening to God of the Woods. So good. Get advice and insight from leading professionals and experts on health, relationships, career, finance, investing, and more. There's so much opportunity to learn and more to imagine when you listen. Start listening today when you sign up for a free 30-day trial at audible.com/morbid.
Peloton has what you need to achieve your fitness goals, no matter why you got started. Me? I got started in actuality when I had kids, and I think it was really me just being like, one, I got to chase them around and have fun with them and not be out of breath, and two, I want to be healthy and strong and around for them for a long time. And the cool thing about Peloton is that you can kind of customize it to what you need it to be, so I could fit it into my busy childcare routine very easily, and it helped me gain some confidence. Whether you need 10, 20, or 45 minutes of you time to sweat or get grounded, Peloton provides flexibility with daily on-demand and live classes that will fit your busy schedule and just everyday life. Peloton has thousands of members whose lives were changed by the workouts, experiences, community, just the teachers. I honestly love the Peloton instructors. They're my favorite. I mean, Bradley Rose, Find your push, find your power with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, weirdos. My name is Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is Morbab.
You sounded like you were hosting a show like Delilah.
Oh my God. Thank you.
Hey,
hey out there.
Everybody out there.
You single ladies.
This is Ash.
This one goes out to all my queens.
I don't know.
All my queens.
Now that I just started sounding like Trixie and Katya and they're like doing a bit.
I like it.
May I please have bread?
Bread.
What's going on?
I'm in a silly, goofy, funny LOL mood.
Me too.
Yeah?
I'm feeling it.
Good.
Feeling it. We got some mini Cadbury cream eggs in this bitch.
I just ate two of them.
I ate three.
Oh.
Wait,
you're just trying to one-up me with Cadbury eggs?
I took a third one out.
Okay.
But I have not yet ingested it.
Yeah, maybe you should chill out.
They're tiny. They're baby.
No, you can do what you want.
This is kind of a hot topic, cream Cadbury eggs.
Oh.
How do you guys feel about them? My husband thinks they're the most disgusting things.
My husband also thinks
and
that.
Anytime I have them in the house, he gags and...
Oh, that's
can't
extra.
If one of us will eat one, he will visibly gag.
Drew just does a little with his nose.
See, my girls love them.
Yeah,
my,
who doesn't?
My girls are correct.
It shouldn't be that hot of a topic.
No, it should not, but it is.
If you don't like
them, I
want
to know what you guys think.
If you don't like them, you're just wrong.
Whoa, she said it. I didn't.
I said it.
I'm here to tell you that your opinion matters. But
oh, wow.
Ash, she's telling me.
Oh, wow,
you
you're
going
to validate them in these streets? No, that's wrong.
Validating.
It's wrong if you don't like them. What are the, there's another option. Is it caramel?
Yeah, the caramel.
So I like caramel, but I don't like those ones.
I'm okay with them, but it's not my.
Yeah, it's not my preference.
Yeah.
I don't really fucks with them, if you will.
I don't either, man. But
I was going to tell you guys something. I thought of it this morning. I was like getting my coffee ready and I was like, I'll say that on the show later.
I'll say that on the show.
I'll say that on the pod. What was it? And then we had such a whirlwind of a morning and now I just have boats and hoes stuck in my head. So
it's true because we got a couple of strep throat cases in my house because kids get sick. Calm down.
I always get one person
that's like, why are your kids sick?
Kids are always sick.
Like, yep, kids are sick.
Said no parent.
And
ever.
Also, it's not just kid. It is also John who has strep throat.
Kid plus John.
So that child and John are kind of sticking together. And so they started calling themselves strep brothers.
But then it made Boats and Hoes get stuck in my head.
It did. So that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's good that we're in a silly mood today because we're talking about something like moderately silly.
Yeah. I mean, anytime we can take it in a place of exorcism or paranormal, it's a different vibe.
Yeah.
I would say.
It is a different vibe.
We can come in a different angle.
Yeah. A silly, goofy angle.
Silly, goofy. It's kind of a wonky angle.
Yes.
In the best way.
It's like curved.
Yeah. I like that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the exorcism. Hello?
Wow.
I don't know what happened. I need an exorcism.
Hello?
All right. We're going to talk about the exorcism of one Roland Doe. So as long as the public has known about the exorcist's supposedly true origins, the character at the center of the story has always been known as Roland Doe, or sometimes Robbie Mannheim, I think.
Mannheim.
Both are obviously pseudonyms to protect his actual identity. But in December 2021, the Skeptical Inquirer, a magazine devoted to scientific skepticism, revealed the identity of Roland Doe. Can you believe that?
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, they reasoned that he had passed away a year earlier, so there was like not really any need for anonymity anymore.
I suppose.
I guess. The identity of Roland Doe has been uncovered by an independent journalist 2 decades earlier, it had been, but the reporter actually opted not to publish the name for legal reasons.
Probably smart.
So people knew who he was for a little bit, but it was kept on the DL.
Wow, that's shocking.
I know. Well, it was a different time.
I was going to say that would never happen now.
Well, exactly, because in the year of our Lord, 2021, it got leaked.
Yeah.
So in 1999, though, taking it back a little bit, a journalist named Mark Opsasnik, I believe, was writing an article on the possession for Strange Magazine, which I prefer, when he interviewed Father Albert Hughes, one of the priests involved in the case.
And damn, that must have been gnarly.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
That'd be crazy.
Let's sit with that for a
second. Let's paint a picture. You get to sit down with Father Albert Hughes, who was involved in the original case that inspired the exorcism.
That's a fucking
The
top
Exorcist. Tip. I mean,
what did you say?
I said the exorcism.
Who inspired the exorcism.
The exorcism that was in the exorcism.
Not a exorcism, the exorcism.
Like, that's a big moment.
Yeah.
Just a weird moment.
I think, surreal. Top 10
yeah,
in your
for
life.
For sure.
Well, according to Hughes, the boy who was exorcised was from Cottage City, Maryland, and he, quote, went on to graduate from Gonzaga High and turned out fine. Anytime I say Gonzaga High, I just want to say Gorgonzola.
And you do that for a reason.
Yeah.
And you don't even know what the reason is.
Tell me what it is.
John loves March Madness, and he usually has me do a fake bracket with him, and I don't know anything about college basketball. I like regular, like higher basketball, whatever, NBA. But I'm like, what is that called?
Big boy basketball,
but I don't know anything about college basketball. So I just pick based on what I think is a cool name. And Gonzaga reminded me of Gorgonzola. And so now I only call Gonzaga Gorgonzola.
Wow,
you might have heard it in subconsciously.
It's possible. Yeah. And we're also just family.
It's true.
That proved it.
Because he'll even do it now. He's like, oh, Gorgonzola moved on to the next round.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at us, so connected.
Gonzaga.
Gonzorgola, I was going to say.
Hello.
Well, with those facts and a few other facts obtained from his research, Opsasnik was able to determine the years that the boy was in high school. And after tracking down a copy of the 1954 Gorgonzola Gonzaga High School yearbook, he narrowed the pool of potential boys to a very small number. And after cross-checking the list with the known attendees of St. James Church, where Albert Hughes was a priest, he was left with just one name, Ronald Hunkler.
Ronald Hunkler. That's a cool name.
It is. I like it.
Hunkler. Yeah.
The story of the Roland Doe and the exorcist have been told and retold like a million gajillion times since the supposed possession occurred, that it's become very, very difficult, if not almost impossible, to tell all the facts from fictions.
Those are my favorite kind of paranormal stories.
They're the best.
I don't want clear facts of fiction.
Frankly, it's most paranormal stories.
Yes.
But then the popularity of the movie that came out made the already sensational story even more sensational, with obviously aspects played up to promote the supernatural actual details of the story.
Hell yeah. So
facts about Ronald and his life before and after the exorcism are sparse and a little difficult to verify. But here's what we do know. Ronald Edwin Hunkler was born June 1st, 1935.
Hey, that is my wedding anniversary.
And the day that one Marilyn Monroe passed away.
It's true. I didn't mean to do that.
yes. And it was in Cottage City, Maryland, that he was born to Edwin and Odell Hunkler. Isn't Odell a cool name?
It is a cool name. I also love the name Edwin.
I do too.
I think that's a really cute name.
That was Ronald's middle name and his father's name.
Love it.
So his father, Edwin, worked for the federal government, and Odell, his mother, was a homemaker. Edwin was very fortunate in that he had a stable job during the peak of the Great Depression, but the pay was relatively low, and the family definitely struggled financially a lot of the time. And this struggle became even greater a few years after Ronald's birth when Odell's mother moved into their house, which obviously put in, you know, kind of an additional strain.
Yeah.
More mouths to feed, more resources being used.
For sure.
Sitting about 1 mile outside the northeast border of Washington, D.C., Cottage City was and still is a pretty suburban area populated mostly by government employees like Edwin Hunkler was. According to Alvin Cagey, one of Ronald's childhood friends, Ronald, quote, had friends, but he was in a sense a little bit of a loner. He was somewhat sedentary, somewhat quiet, as his parents were. In his younger years, Ronald did have a best friend. For the purposes of this story, we're going to call him John.
Love that name.
We don't really, you do?
I do.
That's crazy. We don't really know, like, if his name was John or not, so we're just going to call him that.
John.
John. According to John's brother, JC, these two paired up and were virtually inseparable. They were loners who found each other, and they caused a lot of mischief. There was a close relationship there, a very close relationship.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Loners causing mischief.
Let's go.
What's better?
Kind of like what we do.
Yeah.
But we're not really loners.
No.
Sort of. I don't know. According to JC, when the stories about a possessed boy began making their way around town, he immediately thought of Roland and John. Ronald and John.
That sucks that they used essentially the same name.
No, it does. And let me tell you, it fucked me up the entire time I was reading about this and writing about it.
So Roland, Ronald.
If I say the wrong name, I'm going to do my best to say Ronald the entire time because that is his name. But if I fuck up, just like laugh with me, okay?
Yeah, because no matter what, that's the whatever name is used is a name that he was referred to as.
Yeah, Ronald or Roland.
Yeah.
I'm doing my best to say Ronald.
So like imagine trying to save someone's identity and you use essentially the same name.
You literally just switch three letters.
Yeah.
Like that's fake. Like,
come on.
And if fake. You have dyslexia, the fuck?
Yeah, it's true.
That's not cool.
No.
But JC said, you had these two mischief makers that had a strong tendency to take advantage of people who were weaker than themselves.
Oh, that's not good.
They were a pair of connivers and they had their act down. They were trying to outdo each other. So Oof. He's like, possessed boy, got something to do with the two of them.
Yeah.
Now, if JC remembered Ronald as a mischievous troublemaker, John, who was actually his friend, himself described Ronald in a lot more of extreme terms.
Oh.
According to John, Ronald's home life was anything but typical for a boy in the 1940s. He said Ronald was, quote, smothered by his obsessively religious mother and grandmother, who had deep interests in spiritualism and Ouija boards, shunned by his classmates at school, prone to traumas and even violent outbursts, and exhibited cruel and at times even sadistic behavior toward other children and even animals.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on with his pathology. No. And when it came to his father's influence on Ronald, both JC and John remembered Edwin Hunkler as a man who was physically present in the home, but emotionally absent anywhere else at the time, which was kind of common.
I was going to say of the time, that's not shocking.
Yeah. But I think when you have all those other things at play, it's going to add to it.
It was never good.
No.
Nobody came out of that in a great
way. Unscathed, yeah. JC said of the supposed paranormal activity, I think he could see what was going on, which is why he's never mentioned talking about Edwin.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, since the story broke in the papers, and especially since the release of the book and then the movie, John really tried to distance himself from Ronald and avoid any association with the legend, which I can understand.
Yeah.
In an interview in 1999, he said, I've never said his name in front of anyone, not even my wife.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Damn.
In fact, while nearly everyone remembered John and Ronald as inseparable best friends, even his own brother, John himself wouldn't have actually described it in such intimate terms.
Hmm.
He said, we were playmates and classmates. People ask what he was like back then, and I can tell you that he was never what you would call a normal child. He was an only child and kind of spoiled, and he was a mean bastard.
He was a mean bastard.
I think it sounds like John just kind of put up with him for a while. And yeah. Then even he was like, fuck off.
I feel like everyone has at least had like some interaction with a person like that as they were growing up, where you were just like, you're kind of a dumb bitch. Like, yeah. Why am I hanging out with you?
It's like a friend.
But you just like do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's just one of those.
It's like, then you move to like a new school, like you move up a grade, yeah. And you kind of like branch out a little, yeah, more, and you're like, why the fuck was I friends with,
yeah,
that,
and you
asshole?
Kind of float apart. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So don't feel bad if you were friends with an,
oh,
asshole.
Yeah, I can think of exactly who I used to hang out with. Same. That was kind of,
yeah,
that I look back and I'm like, why did I put myself through that?
Yeah, she was an asshole. Well, as an illustration of Ronald's typical behavior, John remembered a story about a stray dog in the neighborhood.
Oh no.
That, it's okay.
Okay.
That seemed to take a liking to Ronald.
Thank
and
you.
Vice versa. They actually liked each other. But apparently, he said, this dog was mean and nobody ever knew who owned it. It, aww, just came out of nowhere.
No dog is mean.
He was a little mean.
He's not mean.
He doesn't just mean to be.
He was treated badly, I bet.
Yeah, probably.
No dog comes out mean.
You're right. And they all go to heaven.
Yeah.
Well, and this is John's words. He said, well, Ronald basically adopted that dog. That dog really was his best friend, not me. One time he called me up and told me to come over. And I never really trusted him because he was sneaky and a real mean little bastard. I was going over there and he was looking out from the basement window. And when I got to his house, I heard the back porch door slam and I knew right away what he'd done. He'd done this sort of thing many times before to different kids. I started running like hell because he'd sicked that dog on me. When I got home, he called me up and he was laughing like hell. That's the kind of person he was.
I mean, that's pretty funny.
It's a little silly, but also that's fucked up.
It is.
A dog could have ate his face off.
That's like super 1940s behavior, though. I feel.
I think I've seen that in like several.
Like
movies.
I think I've seen that. I feel like that's very like I'm just born.
Yeah,
I'm gonna stick my mean dog on
100%. But it's supposed to be his best friend.
That's the shit you do to your best friend, though.
Yeah.
You know,
John didn't like it.
I don't know. I feel like we're in the Northeast. Maybe we just.
I know that's actually this very kind true. Of.
I'm like, that's just roasting somebody you love.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, that's honestly so true. I remember one time I had a play date with somebody who I thought was like my best friend, and it was like the middle of winter, and we were playing outside, and they just locked me outside.
Yeah, that's just that's just somebody you love.
We were still besties after.
Of course you were.
Yeah.
Because that's love. That's, yeah, what that is.
New England is wild.
We're different.
We are.
So,
but John didn't like that. Mm-mm. So people who knew Ronald as a child paint a picture of a pretty lonely boy overall, it sounds like. Also, with pretty bad social skills since he's sicking his dog on people.
Yeah, that is pretty rough.
And, obviously this is a great example of it, a tendency to behave in cruel, if not outright sadistic ways.
Which is scary.
Because while we can laugh a little bit, that is a fucked up thing to
do. It is a fucked up thing to do.
Especially knowing that the dog is mean.
Well, that's the thing. All I'm hearing is that the dog was mean. It's like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Well, so, it's not only mean to like the friend, it's mean to the dog. You shouldn't put a dog in that position.
That's the thing. Because, again, things were different in the 1940s. Now you do that. That dog so much as touches that person, you're going to have to put that dog down, and that's your fault.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's fucked up because that dog's just doing what they think is going to make you happy.
Exactly.
And that's all dogs want to do.
Exactly.
But the cruel and sadistic stuff is like a different, because again, we're talking about like roast your friends, roast the people you love.
Yeah.
Like these do silly things.
Yeah.
Cruel and sadistic is like a totally different thing.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
And again, people said that he was like mean to other animals and stuff like that.
As soon as you said that, I got a red flag.
That's more like what we're talking about. Unfortunately, like I said, like there's limited information, so we don't have specific examples.
Of like what those cruel and sadistic things are.
But we know that they happened, or people said they did at least. But there was at least one person in Ronald's life who he really truly bonded with, and somebody who he was willing to let his guard down around. And it was his father's sister, Matilda, who was his Aunt Tilly, as he called
her.
Oh,
that's really cute.
I know. They had a really cute relationship, I think. In the stories, the documentaries, and the movies that have been made since the original event, there's always a great deal made about Aunt Tilly, and especially her role as the person who introduced Ronald to the occult. But
damn, Aunt Tilly.
She might have, but again, there's a lot more fiction surrounding aspects of the story than facts, so we don't know. But what is true is that Aunt Tilly lived in St. Louis, and she visited her brother and his family a lot. And during her visit, she always made time for Ronald. They really like to hang out together.
That's some good aunt shit.
It is.
Morbid is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace gives you everything you need to offer services and get paid all in one place. From consultations to events and experiences, showcase your offerings with a customizable website designed to attract clients and grow your business. Also, get paid on time with professional on-brand invoices and online payments. Plus, streamline your workflow with built-in appointment scheduling and email marketing tools. Make smarter business decisions with Squarespace's intuitive built-in analytics tool. Review website traffic, learn where to focus engagement, and track revenue from bookings, invoices, or product sales, all from one place. Head to squarespace.com/morbid for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code morbid to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
They say time waits for no one, but I think neither should payday. To keep your money moving in the direction of your dreams, get Earnin'. Watch your earnings tick up as you work. It's easy and it's free to get started. Add your bank and employment info and they will verify your paycheck. Earnin' is designed to support you in the short term and the long term. I feel like it's always those things that you're not expecting, like unexpected trips to the vet, unexpected car work. That always used to happen to me all the time. And I'd be like, I have no money though. But you will, because Earnin' is that app that gives you access to your pay as you work up to $150 per day with a max of $750 between paydays. Download Earnin' today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin' app, type in more under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Morbid under podcast. Earnin' is a financial technology company, not a bank. Cash outs are based on your available earnings. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Option to expedite your transfer for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. See the cash out user agreement for details. Service not available in all states.
Author Thomas Allen wrote, Aunt Tilly seems to have treated Ronald more like a special friend than as a nephew.
Oh,
that reads a little creepy. I just want to be clear. It's not creepy.
It's not creepy.
Like, yeah. It was just a cute relationship.
It's like she paid. She might have seen, too, that he was a little
off.
Yeah. And like he was a little like socially strange and like a little bit of a loner. And so she was like, I'm going to just.
Yeah.
To make sure that I pay attention to him.
And I think she even saw that her brother probably wasn't super present in her nephew's life. And like he was struggling at school. The adults around him didn't pay a lot of attention to him other than his mom like smothering him.
Yeah.
Which is not the attention that you want.
No.
So she was like, let me just like be a normal person in your life.
Yeah.
But I feel like you hear special friend. Oh, and that 100%. Automatically reads creepy.
Yeah. Like we're in a place now in the world where special friend with an adult is
no bueno.
No go.
So I just wanted to be. You know,
thank you for clearing up on Tilly's name.
Yeah, I had to. Yeah. That's my girl.
Yeah.
So given his inability to form bonds with children his own age and the fact that he, treated his peers pretty shittily, most of Ronald's time was spent with the adults in his life. And like I was just saying, most of them typically just ignored him or treated him like a nuisance. Aww. So in that case, it makes sense why he was drawn so much to somebody like his Aunt Tilly.
Yeah.
She was said to be outgoing, outspoken, and pretty eccentric in an era where most people were conservative and respectable and, buttoned up.
So she probably sees a little bit of something in him, Yeah. Like, she's a little different.
Yeah.
So she's like, I think you just need to be like steered in the right direction.
Yeah, we got to celebrate our differences.
Yeah.
So like Ronald's mother and grandmother, Tilly was also interested in spiritualism, and she introduced Ronald to the Ouija board, which they used together to try to contact the spirit world.
I'm kind of obsessed with all of this.
I'm also pretty obsessed
with
all
this. Like, I do also love that the mom and grandmother are super into spiritualism and the Ouija board. I'm like, wow.
It's funny too, because the mom was like super religious, but she also had an interest in that side of things.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Nobody really knows how much Ronald believed in his aunt's ability to talk to the dead through the Ouija board, or if he really bought into any of the beliefs. But according to Thomas Allen, his interest in the board was at least strong enough for him to engage with it, even when Tilly wasn't visiting. Ooh. So he was using that Ouija board.
So he was into it.
And it wasn't just the spirit board that Tilly believed in. She was also a firm believer in spirit rapping, which is the belief that spirits can communicate with the living by like knocking on walls, floors, any hard surface. Yeah. Some people think it's debunked. I don't.
I feel like it's a hard one to debunk, like fully.
Yeah, I agree. And like we've heard weird tapping in this room before.
We have.
And we've never found the source.
Like you can debunk certain instances of it.
Yes.
For sure.
But not overall.
But a blanket debunkment doesn't feel right here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So considering everything that was going on, it would definitely be fair to say that Ronald was struggling emotionally before his possession and that he didn't have a lot of relationships where he felt supported.
Yeah.
And throughout a lot of the 20th century, expectations of gender were rigid when it came to boys and young men, and especially boys and young men asking for help when it comes to, like, emotional problems. That would have been super unusual.
And that's why they just acted out.
Exactly. Instead. That's exactly my point here. So let's kind of get into it now. As far as anybody can tell, Ronald Hunkler's paranormal experience began in early January 1949. About 5 months into his eighth grade year, his behavior was starting to become a problem at school, and his bullying behavior wasn't giving him any friends. And things finally came to a head that winter when one day, just in the middle of class, a supposedly paranormal experience made him the center of everybody's attention.
Ooh.
His friend John remembered he was sitting in a chair, and it was one of those deals with one arm attached, and it looked like he was shaking the desk. The desk was shaking and vibrating extremely fast, and I remember the teacher yelling at him to stop it. And I remember he kind of yelled, "I'm not doing it." And they took him out of class, and that was the last I ever saw of him at school.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Now,
what?
In later tellings of the story, particularly the version told in Thomas Allen's book, Possession, the event in the classroom was a genuine poltergeist phenomenon where the desk was moving free of human hands, like he wasn't doing it at all.
Huh.
But John, who was in that class, said, nah, the desk certainly did not move around the room like that book said. It was just shaking.
All right. I mean, either way.
Yeah, two versions of that story. Regardless of what was causing the commotion, the disruption with the desk was the last straw for the teachers and the administrators at the high school, and Ronald was asked to not return. So there was definitely stuff leading up to this.
Yeah, there had to be a lot of shit leading up to that.
I think probably the bullying was like a bigger
thing. That's a big deal.
And then, like, he definitely sounds like he was disruptive a lot.
Yeah, if you're being a bully to everyone and treating everyone like shit. Sorry, I just almost yawned while I was saying that.
Things
Not because
happen.
This is boring, just because
it's sleep. Tired.
But
I said it's tired.
It's tired. See?
It's tired over there.
This is tired. But yeah, if you're bullying people,
being disruptive,
you're being like sadistic to people. Like the fact that they use the word sadistic quite often means he's doing some shit.
And also, it was a lot easier to throw people out of school.
It's
back
true.
Then.
And it's like if they're telling him to stop and he's like, "I'm not doing it," and he just keeps doing it. What are you?
Get out of my class.
It's like, of course.
But what sucks is that if it like was legitimate,
then
like,
he just got kicked out because of a ghost.
Yeah, like that's kind of bullshit, you know?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Spirit.
Thanks a lot, Spirit. Well, interestingly, when the incident was reported to the priest months later, it was reported that Ronald, quote, did not continue his attendance out of embarrassment. So there's two stories there.
Huh.
Now, the next major event came a few days later on January 15th. Ronald and his grandmother were at home in his grandmother's room, and they started hearing a dripping noise, followed by scratching sounds coming from within the walls and the ceiling.
I'd be like, fuck, we have mice.
Until... without warning, a framed picture of Jesus Christ began shaking, quote, as
the way
if
you said
I had to say it.
A framed picture of Jesus Christ.
That's a big deal.
Jesus Christ himself.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Je sois Christ. It started shaking, quote, as if the wall back of it had been bumped. So
I'm just picturing, I can't help it.
Go
maybe
go,
this is lack of sleep. I haven't had a lot of sleep. I'm picturing a diamond
in
the wall.
Saying.
And I'm picturing him just booty bumping the wall.
And like he knows Jesus like he's just Christ like, is in the photo.
Boom. Yeah, Jesus Christ is in that photo.
Like he knows.
Yeah, like he's just like dancing to his own beat behind the wall and he's just booty bumping the wall every now and then.
I like the image that conjures.
A big booty demon.
Big booty demon, let away shake it.
A bodacious demon in the wall.
It's gonna be like
booty bumping.
Mario's nickname for Bryn on TikTok.
Yes. Oh, it's man. So true.
Well, that happened.
Big that
booty
happened.
Demon knocking
big
pictures
booty
of
demon.
Big booty demon or mice knocking or pictures
mice,
of
or big booty mice
of Jesus Christ off the wall.
I don't know why when you say it, it's like so intense.
Because I did it on purpose. Because it's so important.
It is. So importante.
In the week or so following the scratching and the dripping sounds, the inexplicable noises became a nightly event in the Hunkler house, usually from like 7 p.m. to midnight.
Yeah, that's when he's getting his rave on. That yeah, demon.
That it, first you pregame, then yeah, you rage.
Then he's really into it.
Yeah, he starts like a little bit slowly.
Yeah.
It takes a couple shots at the pregame.
But once he gets that feeling,
it's over.
It's over.
The night's
his
going
song
crazy.
Comes on and that's it.
He says, let's go, girls. He says, let's go, Hunkler fam. Now, it's unclear what type of activity was experienced during these events for the humans. But most accounts mention Ronald's reports of hearing squeaking shoes on his bed for 6 nights in a row.
Whoa.
So now the demon has some new sneakers yeah, that he's breaking in on Ronald's bed. Some new Nike high tops. Now, it's worth noting that none of the accounts mention which of the family members heard these sounds. But after about a week of Ronald's complaints, the sounds did finally become audible to the other members of the family, aside from just Ronald. But the noise was, quote, only heard at night when the boy went to bed.
Yeah, because that's when you go crazy.
Yeah.
That's your time.
That, I mean, if a demon is going to start partying, it's definitely going to be when the youngest kid goes to bed.
Of course.
Duh.
Yeah.
That's how demon tree works.
Absolutely, it does. Read the handbook.
Read a book. Exactly. Thank you. By the end of the week, though, Ronald's mother and grandmother had accepted Ronald's claims as fact, and they, too, started having paranormal experiences.
Good for them.
And good for them. That was a crazy reaction.
Let's go, girls.
He said, hell yeah, Nana. In one instance, both women were laying down on Ronald's bed and they, quote, heard something coming toward them, similar to the rhythm of marching feet and the beat of drums.
This is all adding up.
And that seemed to travel the length of the mattress and back again.
Yes.
Conga line.
All I can think of is the like the new Gaga song, Abracadabra. And it's like, doon, 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 doon,
doon, doon, doon. I love it.
And he's just like voguing.
Oh my God, the demon.
Yes.
I love it. Voguing and throwing pictures of Jesus Christ Jesus around. Christ. Now, the next significant event came about a week later on January 26th when Aunt Tilly died.
No!
Aunt Tilly died from complications of multiple sclerosis at age 54.
Oh, she's young.
I know.
Oh, and MS. That's tough.
Yeah, that's awful.
Poor Aunt Tilly.
I know. Now, given the special relationship that Ronald had with his aunt, Tilly's death had to have been a devastating event for not him, of course, and the entire family.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now, believing that Tilly's death might have had something to do with the events happening in the house, Ronald's mother held a seance with the Ouija board a few nights later in an attempt to contact Tilly's spirit.
That sounds awesome.
I'm obsessed.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
She's just like, let's seance about it.
I think it's rad.
Like, what a cool mom.
And I think the grandma probably went too because she was into spiritualistic shit. Did. I would have loved to grow up in this house.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Now, according to her testimony provided to Father Raymond Bishop, Odell called out to the spirit and asked, if you are Aunt Tilly, knock 3 times. Supposedly, Ronald's grandmother said she could feel waves of air rushing over her face and head. And then all 3 participants heard a faint knock 3 times. And Odell called out, if you are Tilly, tell me positively by knocking 4 times. At which point she heard 4 distinct knocks, followed by a, quote, claw scratching on Ronald's mattress. You can keep that all in because he has 47 names.
That's scary.
Yeah.
I don't like the claw.
Well, the other thing is you could ask a spirit who they are and you could say, are you Aunt Tilly? And they could say, yeah, bitch. Sure.
Yeah, of course I am.
Yeah, it me.
That's the thing. Like, you think a demon's going to be like, oh, shit.
No, caught me.
That's not my name.
It's me, Beelzebub.
I can only answer to my name.
Right.
Like, no, they lie.
Like, you're just him a cloak.
I don't think that he's, like, totally opposed to lying.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's Aunt Tilly. I just wanted to make that clear. But after the seance, the story starts to get a little hazy and a little inconsistent. According to Marco Psasnik, Odell began, quote, alternating her beliefs that the problems with her son either were the work of the devil or their departed relative. She, like, couldn't make her mind up.
Both of those sound like bad choices.
A stretch.
Yeah.
So basically, she thought that either the house was being haunted by the spirit of Aunt Tilly or that some sort of demonic entity had attached itself to Ronald and he was now harassing the family. But Odell couldn't quite settle on which of the two she believed.
The devil.
I mean, there's a lot going on. So it's either the devil or Aunt Tilly.
Or Aunt Tilly.
And now we need Jesus Christ.
You need Jesus Christ to intervene.
You need your Lord and Savior. Now, whatever the case, this is the point where, according to skeptic Joe Nickel, quote, the case, which began as a seeming poltergeist outbreak, soon advanced to one of alleged spirit communication, to one of supposed diabolic possession.
Oh.
Which I love.
I am obsessed with the word diabolical.
Yeah.
I describe many things as diabolical.
Same.
And now my kids have started to call things diabolical.
I haven't heard that yet, and yeah. I can't wait for the moment that
we
I do.
We were playing Mario Kart last night, and one of them said that Daisy is diabolical.
Daisy is diabolical. Yeah. That's, I love when they use things perfect.
And I was like, agreed.
Is she like the village girl?
No, she's the redhead princess.
Oh, fuck Daisy.
But they saw her, a statue of her dancing with Mario, and they were very angry for Princess Peach.
Oh, I don't like Princess Peach either.
Yeah, I don't mind her.
She makes me really mad at Mario Party. I just wanted to say that.
Time to put that out.
The village girl is diabolical. Yeah,
the villagers are wild.
I don't like them.
No.
Anyway, back to the story.
Yeah.
In the early days of the phenomenon, the Hunklers reported experiences that would become common in later claims of poltergeist activity, including an instance where a pear and an orange, quote, flew across the room where Ronald was standing. Eat your fruit, he said, have a smoothie. Food and beverages were knocked from tables and counters. Other objects seemed to fly off the shelves, and even a Bible was hurled from a shelf and fell right at Ronald's feet.
Read the Bible.
Read it and weep. Not willing to rule out the possibility that her son was possessed, of course, Odell reached out to Reverend Luther Schultz, the minister and the family at the family's Lutheran church. She detailed what had been happening in the home and explained that she was very worried that Ronald was, quote, the victim of an evil ghost, and wondered if it could be Aunt Tilly.
An evil ghost?
I'm like, that's not fair. Just because you don't like your sister-in-law doesn't make her evil.
No, and I don't know. Evil ghosts don't feel
real,
like a thing.
Yeah, no, it's either a demon or
a nothing. Ghost.
Yeah, or just a regular ghost.
It's a ghost.
Yeah, agreed. Well, in order to help guide the family, Reverend Schultz determined he needed to see the phenomenon for himself. And so he arranged for Ronald to spend the night at his home. Don't love that. Ronald arrived at the parsonage a little after 9:30 p.m. A little before 9:30 p.m. on the evening of February 17th. And he stayed until a little after 9 a.m. the next morning. According to the Reverend, that evening he heard scratching noises at various points throughout the night and witnessed, quote, bed vibrations, a chair in which Roland Ronald sat tipping over, and the movement of a pallet of blankets upon which Roland sat.
A pallet of blankets? Yeah. Is he like Princess and the Pea?
Yes.
He's put him on a bunch of blankets.
Yes, obviously.
Okay, he just, okay
he
Reverend.
Was sitting there and it moved. Demonic. Okay. It's the devil.
All right, he's just staying at your house while that all happens.
Yeah, I don't like that. Well, a little over a week after Ronald spent the night at the Reverend's home, the phenomenon in the Hunkler house escalated and became more physical. Beginning on the night of February 26th and occurring four nights in a row, he complained to his parents that something had attacked him in the night and showed them scratch marks all over his body that seemed to have been made by claws.
Dang.
Like the noises and the other various phenomena, Father Bishop's diary indicates that the only other person to have seen the marks on Ronald's body at the time were his mother.
Okay.
But, like, they're there.
Yeah.
So for more than a month, the Hunkler family had been experiencing this crazy shit in their home. You know, it wasn't exactly dangerous, but it was disruptive, especially for 13-year-old Ronald at the time.
Damn.
Who, you know, was the focus of the activity.
That's very,
unfortunate.
Puberty. Esque.
So it's very puberty-esque, but there are studies that that happens.
I know, we've seen it.
It's interesting.
In different cases.
Remember that one that we did a couple months ago?
Yes, it was the that's the one that made me think of.
Then that one was like fucking crazy.
Yeah,
like I believe that one.
Puberty's wild.
Puberty for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Guys, one thing about me is that I love weddings. My wedding was my favorite wedding that I've been to. I'm a little biased, but actually, I liked Elena's wedding too a lot. And guess what? We both used Zola. Zola made the wedding planning process one of the easiest things on the planet. Zola has absolutely everything you need to get started planning your wedding from start to finish. My favorite feature that they had, I'm telling you, I signed up for that the night I got engaged and started looking at wedding venues. I was like, let's go.
But I used so many of the features. My favorite one was they created a checklist that started from when I got engaged to the very day of my wedding. Zola is modern wedding planning for modern couples. No lie, with Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. And not only does Zola have every tool you need to make planning enjoyable, from making your vendor search non-anxiety inducing to wedding websites and an instant registry that you can literally build with one click, they also just really get you. From challenging the expectation that one person will do all the planning work to reminding you that there's no right way to do things, only what's right for you, Zola will have your back from day one to the wedding day. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. You guys, I got one of my absolute favorite packages in the mail the other day. I got a whole box that was put together by Happy Egg. They included some super cool merch in there. I was super excited to get the little socks, a little hat. But most importantly, I was over the moon to get my Happy Eggs. Happy Egg believes in spreading happiness through the simple pleasure of high quality and delicious eggs. Their free-range farming standards, working with small family-owned farms to raise their happy hens outside on over 8 acres, coupled with the care and treatment their hens receive, lead to tasty orange yolks that are rich and full of flavor. If you've never had Happy Eggs before, I don't know what you're doing with your life. You need to go to your local grocery store and look for that yellow carton and crack open Happy Baby. You crack those eggs open and they're about to be the most beautiful yolks you've ever seen in your life. If you're like me and you love like an Eggs Benny moment or even just a simple sunny side up moment and you have something to dip those eggs into, I do a grilled English muffin, or you dip the grilled English muffin into the eggs, or you could dip the egg into the egg if you're really feeling crazy. Visit happyegg.com/morbid to find a store near you.
But it is interesting that poltergeist activity kick it up
link
a notch.
Up to that.
Well, and you know, it's causing a lot of issues for him. He got kicked out of school. It removed a lot of, I mean, he didn't have like a lot of social support, but what social support he did have at school was now gone.
Yeah.
Outside of the home. But fortunately, Odell Hunkler did get the assistance that she was hoping for from the church. But that assistance added even more people to the story, whose version of events would further complicate an already convoluted story.
Love that.
Making it even more difficult to tell fact from fiction.
Let's go!
Which to some people is like, womp womp. To me, that's like, awesome.
No, add more shit to this.
Give me more crazy shit. So the events that comprised the first month of Ronald's supernatural experience were based a lot on Odell and Ronald's reports to Father Bishop, with some additional statements from one or two other witnesses. They were pretty benign to a point until the introduction of those claw marks on Ronald's body.
Yeah.
That obviously indicated that the problem was getting a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
And for Odell, who had previously been unsure about the origin of her son's problem, it was now very clear that he was the victim of an evil entity.
An evil demon.
An evil onion, taking it back. Now, in late February, Odell consulted with Father Albert Hughes, the priest at St. James Catholic Church in nearby Mount Rainier, a different priest now. So Father Albert Hughes explained that he knew very little about demonic possession and even less about exorcism, but he suggested that the family use blessed candles, holy water, and prayer to bless the home.
That sounds nice.
It does. I don't know why I went Southern, but I just wanted to.
With this kind of stuff.
You just do. In the days that followed, Odell did as Hugh suggested. She sprinkled holy water around the house. She prayed constantly, but very little seemed to change. At one point, she actually even tried to baptize Ronald, placing candles around his bed and saying prayers. And according to the diary account, the flames on the candles around the bed, quote, all began moving back and forth in unison. And Ronald, he responded with rage.
Oh, that's upsetting. Because when you first said that, all I can think of is the flames just being like, all just dancing together.
And Abracadabra still playing.
It's always Abracadabra.
But then Roland Ronald is like,
whoa! He's pissed. That's upsetting.
That actually hurt. I'm going to take a sip.
My kids actually love the new Lady Gaga song.
As they should.
Yeah, all of them love it.
I love that for them. Now, Father Bishop's diary indicates that this behavior resulted in Ronald actually being admitted for a 3-day stay at University Hospital. Though there aren't really additional details about that hospitalization or the outcome.
They said you got ghosts in your blood.
But, like, that's him. Like, whatever he did, like, in response to being baptized landed him a 3-day hospital stint.
Sounds intense.
Super duper.
Sounds like it was more than just being like, rah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's all I thought that yeah, I could I mean, do. Yeah. I don't want to reenact anything and end up in the hospital myself.
No. And we've got, you know, we've got flames in here.
Yeah. And I have
lighting shit on fire.
I have a job to do.
Yeah.
So after Ronald's discharge from the hospital, the family took a trip to visit relatives in Missouri, where according to Bishop, other members of the family also witnessed the markings on Ronald's skin. It's here that Father Raymond Bishop becomes involved for the first time, really. He was a member of the clergy at St. Louis University, St. Louis, St. Louis, and the director of the school's Department of Education. In later years, most of the information that informed both the legends about Ronald's story and actually the story of the exorcist would come from this man's diary.
I love that.
It's awesome.
Something about that is so spooky and cool.
It's like heavy metal.
Yeah, it really is. It,
like I did a rock on
She sign. Did. She was like heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
Just
to
not,
all of you.
Not regular metal.
No. Heavy. That's why
the heavy variety.
That's why I like really thrust my hand when I did it. Because if it was just metal, I'd be like, metal. Like just a little, but it's
this is like
heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
So you have to thrust your hand. Thank you. Now, anyways, according to Thomas Allen, one of Ronald's extended family members, referred to as Elizabeth, was a student at St. Louis University. And after becoming concerned about Ronald's condition, she approached Raymond Bishop for advice. Like Albert Hughes, the other father, and virtually all clergy at the time, Bishop knew very little about possession or the rite of exorcism himself, but he still agreed to meet with the family to see what he could do to help. He lives to serve.
Yeah, I mean, go read up on exorcisms,
dude. That's pretty much what he did.
That's what you can do.
He acknowledged that before he gave the family his thoughts on the situation, he needed time to, quote, think about what possession was and how it could be proved.
I love that.
He's kind of like approaching it scientifically.
He is, because he's like, I need to think on this.
Give me some time to think.
Let me just quickly come up with a definition of possession first, and then I will discover how to fix it.
I'll work on it.
I like that.
So Father Bishop met with the Hunkler family for the first time on March 9th, where he claimed to have witnessed the scratching on Ronald's body and actually saw the boy's mattress move. At the time, he kept his suspicions of any danger to himself. But later he would admit that he, quote, had sensed from the beginning that Robbie was threatened with possession.
He's like, I wasn't going to tell these people,
but
I thought shit was going to go down.
He said, I had an inkling.
I wasn't going to give them a heads up, but
what am I to do?
Yeah.
So at the time he told the Hunklers that he needed to consult with some other Jesuit priests and that he would get back to them ASAP.
Yeah.
Hopefully Robbie doesn't get like super duper possessed in the meantime.
Yeah, you just kind
of. Because right now it's just like a little threat of it. Like it was like on the precipice of possession.
Yeah, you know.
It wasn't quite there.
Possession is in the air.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. I feel like that would be like a good name for a movie.
Possession in the air.
Yeah, I like it.
I like that.
Maybe a band name. We'll workshop
it. Possession in the air. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Hello, Wisconsin. So it's not completely clear who Bishop spoke with and what he told them at all.
Priests.
Unclear things. But as Marco Upsasnik points out, this vagueness and ambiguity would become one of the hallmarks of Father Bishop's reporting, which is a little problematic when you consider the fact that the bulk of the information about the exorcism did come from his reports.
Yeah.
Problematic and fun.
Pretty awesome.
Upsasnik wrote, Bishop does not always make it clear who actually witnessed the events being described. He often fails to mention when the priests are in the room, when they're absent, and when the information comes secondhand from the boy's mother. The possibility of fraudulent activity is neither considered nor investigated.
What he needed was a good editor.
Yeah.
You know, just an editor to be like, you're not really giving us enough texture in these descriptions. Can you kind of like who else is in the room?
That's the thing. It's like when they go back on Bravo shows and they, like the editors give you the timestamps of the events that happened.
Important.
He needed something like that.
Yeah.
So regardless of how things played out behind the scenes, though, 2 days later on March 11th, Father Bishop returned to the family, this time in the company of another key witness in this story, Father William Bodern.
So many fathers.
Lots of fathers. Daddies everywhere.
Yeah.
Around, that's inappropriate to
that
say.
That was horrifying.
Leave it in. Around 11 p.m. at night, Ronald went to bed.
At 11 p.m. at night?
I don't know. I just feel silly.
11 p.m. at night.
At night. That's actually one of my biggest
pet peeves. I know it is. That's why I was shocked you said it.
Maybe I'm almost possessed.
Maybe.
Around 11 p.m. in the evening, Ronald went to bed, at which point the three men gathered around his bedside and Bodern, I hate it. You know, they had to wait until he was sleeping. Bodern read the novena, which is the Catholic devotional prayer. It also could be the novena. I didn't look it up. And reportedly blessed the boy with a, quote, piece of bone from the forearm of St. Francis Xavier and fixed a relic-encrusted crucifix under the boy's pillow before leaving the room.
This is the most metal shit I've ever heard.
Why do you have a bone from the forearm of St. Francis Xavier?
Boop.
Did he...
just, like, boop them with a bone.
Did he say that that's okay for you to have? I don't know about that.
He's not here to say.
That's what they just that's assume, my whole point.
They're assuming he's fine with it.
You know so what they far, say about assuming.
You know what, though? So far, he hasn't made a fuss. So they're not.
Maybe this is his fuss. Maybe this right here is his fuss.
This is how he fusses.
The fact that they just they quote unquote blessed him with a piece of bone from the forearm of Mr. St. Francis Xavier. I don't know.
And put a relic encrusted crucifix under his pillow.
Yeah.
You can't fucking make this up.
No, you literally
this is
can't.
Real. Like you literally can't make that up.
Well, a short time later, while the priests were sitting in the living room with the family, they heard a loud crash come from Ronald's room, Ronald Roland's room, and ran in to see what happened. In the bedroom, they found that a large bookcase had slid across the room, a bench had been flipped over, and the crucifix that Father Baudurin had put under the pillow appeared to be moved to the edge of the bed.
Oh.
Baudurin also claimed that he witnessed the bed shaking when they entered the room, and it only came to a stop when Odell shouted, "Aunt Tilly, stop!"
Here's my thought, though.
Tell me.
I think there's two things at play here.
What's
I
up?
Think there's a daemon who's like pushing over bookshelves and shit and
for
trying
sure.
to pull that relic out. I think Aunt Tilly's shaking the bed to wake him up.
To help
be
him?
Like, get out of the room.
Maybe.
So that's my view of this. I think Aunt Tilly is trying to let him know that shit's afoot.
I like to believe that Aunt Tilly just passed on.
Yeah, if that's Aunt Tilly, if they're shaking the bed and she yells Aunt Tilly stop and the bed shaking stops, then she was trying to wake him up.
I agree.
She was the one doing it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, the scene witnessed in Ronald's bedroom that night was enough to convince the priest that something had in fact possessed the boy. After a few nights spent weighing their options, the two men took their concerns to Archbishop Joseph Ritter, and not to be confused with John Ritter.
No.
This is Joseph Ritter.
Oh, hi, Lord John Ritter.
I know, R.I.P. And on March 16th, Baudurin was given permission to perform the rite of exorcism.
He got permission from the archdiocese.
Which usually doesn't happen.
No, we're all
the archdiocese
wondering.
Is pretty stingy with their permission giving.
They don't just hand it out.
Interesting that they don't just hand it out, but they gave it to a man who like wasn't super familiar with exorcisms.
Yeah, they were like, you'll figure it out.
They were confident in his abilities.
Yeah, he said he was coming up with a definition. So
and it seems as though he did. That night, Bishop and Baudurin returned to the house, this time in the company of Baudurin's assistant, Father Walter Hollerin, who becomes a bigger player later on, and started what would ultimately be an almost month-long process of attempting to exorcise whatever evil entity had possessed Ronald Hunkler. Now, if you've ever seen an exorcism,
yeah,
picture that happening for a month.
No.
That's insane.
Like, I don't have the stamina.
A lot of times they last like a couple hours or like a couple days, and even that is horrifying. A month.
A month.
Almost a month.
Yeah.
For reasons that remain unclear throughout the process, Ronald would be moved back and forth multiple times between his aunt's home in a local rectory and Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis.
Huh.
So he was like hospitalized sometimes during this. Now, after introducing the family to Father Hollerin, Father Baudurin wasted no time getting to work. You cannot waste time when you're exercising.
No, it's time.
Yeah, on the treadmill or in a religious way.
Yeah.
So in Ronald Roland's bedroom, Baudurin started talking with Ronald Roland to, quote, examine his conscience and make an act of contrition before starting the rite. Then, joined by the two other priests and several family members, the group gathered around Ronald's bed and started praying. According to Father, as they prayed, the mattress began to lift slightly off the bed and then lower back down. But he insisted that the family ignore the theatrics and continue praying.
Ain't no way I could ignore those theatrics.
I could not pray through that.
No way.
No. For hours, the three priests recited the rite in Latin while the family continued their prayer. And finally, the first cycle of the rite had ended. And Father Baudurin concluded by shouting, Praecipio tibi, which is, I command thee.
Love it.
I don't know if I said it really well, but I did my best.
Priest yelling in Latin is one of the scariest things ever.
Yeah, I don't even like you really shouldn't read the Latin. I shouldn't
not
have.
Read the Latin.
You see what I did there? I set that up. But when he yelled that, Ronald screamed in what sounded like terrible pain.
Oh, no.
And as Father Bowdern was concerned, as far as he was concerned, Ronald's scream was evidence that he was indeed possessed and that the rite was actually working.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So the priest continued aggressively reciting that rite of exorcism as Ronald just writhed around uncomfortably on the bed.
Damn.
In his wild thrashing, he quickly kicked the blankets away, uncovering his body. And with his pajama top unbuttoned, the participants in the room watched as three red long welts appeared on his chest, as if something was attempting to cut its way out of him from the inside.
Damn.
Yeah. Later, Father Bishop would describe the welts as, quote, marks raised up above the surface of the skin, similar to an engraving.
Ooh.
And Father Bowdern, he paid no attention to the welts. He just carried on with his rite.
Oh, yeah.
As more and more welts started appearing on Ronald's body. The more they recited, the more Ronald appeared to be in, like, immense pain. And soon the welts and scratches started producing faint lines of blood all over Ronald's legs, his stomach, and his back.
Holy shit.
Yeah. The longer the ritual dragged on, the more and more pain Ronald seemed to experience. At one point, one of the relatives in the room claimed that they saw the image of the devil. The devil.
The devil himself.
Appear on Ronald's thigh.
Oh.
They saw it. In his journal, Bishop wrote, the arms were held above his head and seemed to be webbed, giving the hideous appearance of a bat.
Okay.
At other times in the evening.
Bats are awesome.
He's not saying they're not.
The hideous appearance?
Well, he actually is kind of saying that. It is rude. He should think about his words.
Yeah.
At other times in the evening, though, participants reported seeing words appear in the scratches on Ronald's body. People saw the words hell, go, and a large X on his thigh.
Okay.
And that was before the days of Twitter turning to X.
Oh,
so
shit.
I don't know what that meant exactly. Now, after hours of the Latin ritual, the group finally broke for the night because everybody was really tired.
Yeah.
And Ronald appeared to fall into a deep sleep. But through the night, while still conscious, he would periodically slam his fists into the headboard above him or into his pillow. And the next morning, when Father Bowdern asked what he was dreaming about, Ronald said he had been fighting a huge red devil. It felt slimy and was extremely powerful. And Dave said, that sounds like puberty. He said, how else would you describe puberty if not slimy and extremely powerful? And I said, Dave, that's a great point.
You're right.
I said, I don't have an argument for you, sir. In the days and weeks that followed, both the exorcism and Ronald's behavior grew more and more aggressive and offensive.
Ooh.
In one diary entry, Father Bowdern reports, from 12 midnight on, it was necessary to hold R during his fights with the spirit. Two men were necessary to pin him down on the bed. R shouted threats of violence at them, but vulgar language was not used.
Oh, that's good.
R spit at his opponents many times. He used a strong arm whenever he could free himself, and his blows were beyond the ordinary strength of a boy. So he was,
they were like, he was violent, but he was never vulgar.
He was never vulgar. Yeah. It's important to know.
It's important to know.
But he was also swole. He was packing a punch.
Swole beyond his years.
Yeah, exactly. Now, at times, Ronald would also speak in a, quote, diabolical, high-pitched voice. Which, like,
I love it.
What is a diabolical, high-pitched voice? Can you try it? Can you please try it?
So, like, we're talking, like, a demon high voice. A
diabolical, high-pitched.
It's got to be like,
do it.
I'm trying to like think about
it. She's getting ready. She did something with her teeth.
Because you have to like get in a snarly way, I think. It's got to be like that. Kind of.
I don't like it.
You got to like show teeth when you do it.
Mikey doesn't like it either. Mikey shook his head.
I mean, it's diabolical.
I'm just picturing like, I'll get you, my pretty. That's diabolical and high pitched.
Yeah. You know?
Thanks.
I don't know. We weren't there.
We weren't there. And unfortunately, they don't have voice notes from
back
then.
They don't, unfortunately.
Hi, this is Steve Buscemi, you know, the actor. Well, now I'm an actor and podcast host from Piece of Work Entertainment and Campside Media in association with Olive Productions comes Big Time, an Apple original podcast. Each episode follows the story of one misfit with big dreams who isn't afraid to bend a few rules or take a shortcut to get there.
Well, who steals bees?
I was duped.
I shoot you in the leg.
This is Big Time. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts.
Ugh, He also was said to be swinging his fists at the priests and other adults in the room. He also supposedly broke Father Halloran's nose.
Fuck.
I know. And then at other times, he would sit up normally in bed and just sing sweetly.
Oh, that's nice.
And la-di-da-do, la-di-da-dee.
He would sit up and just go, abracadabra.
Oh, that's great. He would also, sad, cry off and on.
Oh.
But then immediately his attitude would change and he'd start swearing. He did eventually start swearing and being vulgar. And he would also make masturbation gestures in order to embarrass the other people in the room. Keep it together.
That's diabolical.
It truly is. Other times he would spout Latin words and phrases to the surprise of his parents, who swore that Ronald did not know Latin and had never been exposed to that language before.
If I know one thing about my kid, it's that he doesn't know Latin.
That's the thing. At times, though, he was said to be more lucid and appeared to be on the mend. So his parents started wondering maybe if it was time to return to Maryland and send him back to school.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Because no, but there were like little like week-long periods where he would be completely fine.
Yeah.
So they'd be like, all right, like, you're 13. We got to give you to school. Yeah. You got to learn and shit.
This will just be a silly time we think about later where you were possessed for a little while.
Honestly, what's funny is like that's ultimately what ends up happening. This like, man lives a long life. A
funny story
yeah.
that we look back on.
But unfortunately, and this is so crazy, as soon as Ronald caught on to their conversations, he would become possessed again.
Whoa.
In one instance, when the subject of his returning to school came up, he started thrashing around on the bed and tore open his pajama top, and it revealed that the words "no school" were scratched on his chest. This demon does not fuck with the heavy learning.
He said, "School's out for ever."
I wish it said that instead. That song wasn't a thing yet, I don't think.
No.
So as the days wore on, Ronald became more abusive to anyone and everyone who entered the room. Yeah. He would swear at them. He would attempt and sometimes succeed to make himself vomit.
Oh, that would piss me off.
He would piss on himself.
Oh, no.
And otherwise be assaultive.
Yeah.
In one instance, he managed to break one of the bed springs from the mattress and jam it into Father Bowdern's arm.
Oh.
Drawing blood, obviously. Another time when the family traveled back to Cottage City for a visit, accompanied by Father Bowdern, Ronald became physically violent on the train. He was said to have punched Bowdern in the testicles and screamed, "That's a nutcracker for you, isn't it?" Which is low-key just teenage boy shit.
That is low-key.
I'm like, babe, he wasn't possessed. Like, babe, that's just a 13-year-old boy.
He just doesn't have another 13-year-old boy to do it to. So he does it to the priest that's been sitting by his bed every night.
Thinking of him punching a priest in the balls.
Wow.
And saying, "That's a nutcracker for you, isn't it?" It's diabolical.
I love, isn't it? I love that part of it. That's a nutcracker for you, isn't it? Father.
Can you confirm that's a nutcracker, Father? Can you confirm that I just cracked your nuts? D's nuts.
It is literally if this kid had friends. If he hadn't been pulled out of school and all that shit.
Oh, he was nutcrackering people when he was at school.
Nutcracking everybody. He's 13 years old. And he'd be doing it and being like, "That's a nutcracker for you, huh?" And then they'd all laugh.
He was doing that. That's why he got kicked out of school.
But instead, he's got like an older priest that hangs out all the time.
Oh my God.
That's his friend. He's like, of course.
Isn't it?
Isn't it?
So funny.
Oh, damn. Imagine being on that train.
I would have taken it on my phone.
I would have taken it on my phone. A little bit.
1943 wouldn't have stopped me.
You would have just
gotten that for TikTok. Well, for some reason, after all that craziness, on April 4th, the Hunklers decided it was time to go back to Maryland so that Edwin could go to work and Ronald Roland could go back to school and nutcracker someone else. Then, after 5 days in Maryland, Ronald started acting out again, so he got sent back to Missouri and admitted to a hospital where he was observed for psychiatric symptoms. Feeling like they'd left too soon, Edwin and Odell also returned to Missouri to support their son.
Those are good parents, yeah. Right there.
Yeah. The exorcism finally came to an end on the evening of April 18th. The priest had spent most of the afternoon and evening reciting the rite of exorcism over the boy, who now was draped in several religious medals and holding a crucifix in his hand.
My God.
It constructs a visual.
Yeah.
Throughout the day, his demeanor had swung back and forth from calm and pleasant to mean and violent. But by the evening, he did seem to have calmed down. And his father, Baudern, recited the Latin phrases over the bed, demanding to know the identity of the demon that possessed the boy. Ronald Roland's demeanor changed again, and he started thrashing about the bed, claiming he was a fallen angel.
Oh, like the devil. Like Satan.
Like Lucifer Morningstar.
Yeah.
Finally, around 11 p.m., a, quote, new masculine voice emerged from Ronald, who said,
Satan, Satan, I am Saint Michael. I command you, Satan, and the other evil spirits to leave this body in the name of Dominus immediately, now, now, now.
That's my best masculine voice.
Mike is literally, Mike is beat red.
That shit broke me.
Satan, Satan. In the name of Dominus. Immediately.
Immediately. All junior girls report to the gymnasium. Immediately.
Oh my God. I haven't laughed this hard in years.
Oh shit. I love a paranormal story.
You too. They're so good.
They're so fun.
Well, after that, male voice emerged. That was a clip, by the way.
Oh man, it was. It was audio.
They got it from 1940. Yeah. Whatever. Whatever.
That was funny.
After that, Ronald Roland's body spasmed one final time. He fell backward on the bed. And then in his normal 13-year-old voice, he said, he is gone. He said, cool. He peaced out, y'all.
Y'all, he left.
He said, peace up, A-Town.
So later, the ultimate Irish goodbye.
He didn't feel like staying any longer.
He didn't say bye, but he just left.
So later, Ronald would tell Father Baudern, in that final moment of possession, he had a vision of Saint Michael holding a flaming sword.
Damn it!
Heavy metal. The Hunkler family stayed in Missouri with the family for 12 more days just to be sure that Satan was actually gone before finally returning home to Maryland. During this time, Father checked in with them regularly, but as far as anybody could tell, the possessing demon had left Ronald's body for good.
For him.
By all accounts, the phenomenon never occurred again once the Hunklers went back to Cottage City. Ronald was enrolled at Gorgonzola High School and he went on to college, where he studied chemical engineering and went on to work as a scientist for NASA.
Okay, Ronald.
Period.
Okay.
The motherfucker who inspired the story of The Exorcist became a scientist for NASA. That blew my mind. That's the funnest fact.
That is the funnest fact.
The funnest of all facts.
The funnest fact.
Thank you for agreeing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
In a letter dated August 19th, 1951, Father Bishop wrote of his visit to the Hunkler's house. He said, R, now 16, is a fine young man. His father and mother also became Catholic, having received their first Holy Communion on Christmas Day, 1950.
Damn.
Praise be.
I mean, I guess if anything's going to turn you Catholic,
it's an exorcism.
That's
going
to
do possession.
It. Yeah.
Well, the diary of the account written by Father Bishop, like I said, became something of a legend at Georgetown University, though few have actually seen it.
I want to see it.
Well, few have, so good luck.
Yeah.
No one seems to be able to settle on how long the document actually is. Some people say it's 16 pages and others say 26.
Okay.
But presumably this is how it came to the attention of the Washington Post and other Washington area papers in late 1949, where it gained some brief traction before mostly fading into obscurity, since none of the reporters seemed to be able to track down any of the participants to verify any kind of story. Other sources allege that Father Luther Miles, the family's local priest, was the source to leak to the press. And that's when the story, like, really came out. While some of the press reports minimize the supposed demonic possession, which is fucking lame, others chose to play it up or just tell it as it was.
Hell yeah.
For all it was worth, citing the various ungodly messages that appeared on Ronald's body.
Like no school.
Like no school. That's ungodly. And the various examples of unknown telekinetic force, like when the picture of Jesus Christ
was booty bumped off the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for William Peter Blatty's 1971 novel and the movie that followed 2 years later, it's pretty likely that nobody actually would have ever heard of Roland Doe or Ronald Hunkler.
It's true.
But the timing was just right. Americans were taking a particular interest in the occult at the time, so the story was thrust back into the spotlight, and it kind of took on a life of its own. Now, it's important to be clear that even Blatty's novel was heavily influenced by Ronald's story, even though it was. It's actually just one of several influential stories and events that also included the Loudoun possessions and the Louviers possession. Both were 17th century witch trials that I think you would probably be pretty interested in covering.
Oh, yeah.
So write that down, Biatch.
I'm writing it down right now.
And there were different archaeological excavations that occurred throughout the early to mid-19th century across Africa and the Middle East that also inspired his story. So with so many different versions of the story floating around in the cultural zeitgeist, the question remains, what exactly did happen to Ronald Hunkler in 1949? Was he possessed by a demonic presence, or was there something even more complicated going on? Who knows? Now, at this point, it's probably impossible to say with certainty what exactly happened to Ronald, but if there was an authority on the subject, it would probably be investigative journalist Mark Opsasnik. More than just the individual responsible for discovering Roland Doe's real identity, he also devoted a ton of time to the story. He conducted interviews with more than 100 people who actually knew the Hunkler family personally and the other figures in the story, all in an attempt to verify the details of what has become one of America's most iconic scary stories. And his interviews with Ronald's childhood friends and peers revealed that, far from being an ordinary shy boy, Ronald Hunkler was a very lonely, somewhat troubled kid who was struggling.
Yeah.
His father never actually believed that his son was possessed, reportedly, was emotionally unavailable, so he rarely comes up in the story at all. And the women in his life, on the other hand, were hugely influential, almost to his detriment, especially like his mom, I think, using their love of spiritualism as maybe the only means of bonding with him. And when it came to children his own age, it seems like his behavior and, you know, flaws kept them at an arm's length.
Yeah.
But Opsasnik didn't just speak to Ronald's friends and family. He also tracked down anybody who was directly involved with the case or familiar enough with those who were. And of the three priests at the center of the exorcism story, only Father Halloran was alive when Opsasnik began his investigation. At the time, Halloran actually reluctantly agreed to an interview, but he ended up revealing a lot about the case and its legacy.
Oh, damn.
When asked whether or not he would go on record as saying he believed that Ronald was truly possessed, he declined.
Oh.
He said, no, I can't go on record. I never made an absolute statement about these things because I didn't feel I was qualified. I hadn't studied the phenomena and that sort of thing.
Huh.
According to him, Ronald never spoke in a voice other than his own.
Oh.
He never demonstrated supernatural strength or abilities.
Oh.
And when asked about Ronald's supposed extraordinary strength, Halloran said, I don't know. I never even thought very much about it. It certainly wasn't Mike Tyson hitting me in the nose or something like that. And as for Ronald speaking Latin, a language that he supposedly didn't know and had only occasionally heard, Father clarified, I think he mimicked us.
Oh,
so he's a non-believer.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, all valid.
All valid. But the rest of his interview with Father Halloran unfolded in a similar thread. He recalled Ronald spitting and swearing a lot. He didn't have any recollection of Ronald vomiting or urinating.
Oh.
And as far as the multiple reports of the bed moving, he acknowledged that they did, but he said it was on rollers, like any bed at the time. So there was really no way of knowing if it was moving, like how it was
from
moving.
From him moving or if it was, okay.
Yeah. Opsasnik's investigation obviously provides a lot of clarifying information around what did and didn't happen during the exorcism of Ronald Hunkler, but it also provides some insight as to why there are so many gaps in the story and how it managed to get out to the public.
Yeah, for sure.
And when it comes to the earlier part of the story, where Bishop claims to have been involved with the family in Ronald's hospitalization, as well as his own attempted exorcism, Opsasnik was unable to find any information on Bishop's claims, so we don't know. His research indicates that Bishop didn't get involved until March and that the vast majority of the information he collected was from secondhand sources.
Okay.
Opsasnik pointed out, no mention is made whatsoever of the alleged first exorcism attempted by Father Hughes at Georgetown University Hospital, and nothing is written of the boy's father's feelings or level of involvement or the possible presence of psychosomatic illness within the boy.
Interesting.
Very interesting. If Mark Opsasnik and other skeptics are correct, and Ronald Hunkler was never really possessed, then what actually did happen? Opsasnik says, personally, I do not believe Rob Doe was possessed. And instead, he's come to his own conclusion based on everything he learned about the case and the people involved. He said, "There's simply too much evidence that indicates that as a boy, he had serious emotional problems stemming from his home life. There's not one shred of hard evidence to support the notion of demonic possession. The facts show that he was a spoiled and disturbed only child with a very overprotective mother and a non-responsive father. To me, his behavior was indicative of an outcast youth who desperately wanted out of Bladensburg Junior High School at any cost. He wanted attention, and he wanted to leave the area and go to St. Louis. Throwing tantrums was the answer. He began to play his concocted game. For his efforts, he got a collection of priests who had no previous exorcism experience, who doted over him as he lay strapped to a bed. His response was that of any normal child. He reacted with rage. He wanted out. Without delving into the dynamics of psychosomatic illness, there's no question there was something wrong with Rob Doe prior to January 1949, something that modern era psychiatry might have best addressed. Rob Doe was not just another normal teenage boy."
My favorite part of that is that he got a collection of priests.
As his
like
prize.
As his prize.
He said he was upset and he got a collection,
of priests. Yeah. Like, that's just the most horrifying thing I can imagine.
That's not the prize that I personally want.
Like, you want to play this game? Here's a collection of priests that's going to sit by your bed at
night. Do you feel as though you've won?
Did you win?
Did you win, Ronald?
That's a real lose-lose.
It is. Well, whether he was possessed or not, Ronald Hunkler's 1949 claims of possession did help to fuel America's imaginations and, of course, America's interest in the supernatural. And of course, as one of the primary influences on The Exorcist, his story is everywhere. It's like part of American supernatural lore.
Yeah.
And while we may never know if it was real or not, it seems at this point, really doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't.
It's a fun fucking story.
The story is fucking a blast all the way through.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I like that story.
I love that story.
And I love that he became a NASA scientist. So like he got
it worked out.
It all,
yeah.
And he came out the other end.
Personally,
so good for him.
I think he was possessed.
I think, you know, let's go, girls.
Yeah, and I think my story is that he was possessed and until he helped him out.
That's I like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ. Amen.
Jesus Christ.
So yeah, if you want to keep listening, we hope you do. We hope you keep listening.
We hope you
keep
it weird,
but not so weird as getting a prize of three priests.
Of a collection.
Unless you want that. A collection of priests. You can have it.
Yeah.
If you want it.
If you want it.
Keep it.
It's
so
available
weird
to you.
That if you want that, you get it. And that if you don't.
You don't.
You don't.
Bye.
Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
You know those creepy stories that give you goosebumps? The ones that make you really question what's real? Well, what if I told you that some of the strangest, darkest, and most mysterious stories are not found in haunted houses or abandoned forests, but instead in hospital rooms and doctor's offices? Hi, I'm Mr. Ballin, the host of Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries. And each week on my podcast, you can expect to hear stories about bizarre illnesses no one can explain, miraculous recoveries that shouldn't have happened, and cases so baffling they stumped even the best doctors. So if you crave totally true and thoroughly twisted horror stories and mysteries, Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries should be your new go-to weekly show. Listen to Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.